the unmarried party to a bigamous marriage, an accomplice to the bigamist, the bribe giver, an accomplice to the taker. And this is good language, very true, I think. To seek a systematic legislative resolution of these issues seems a hopeless effort. No one can draft a prohibition of adultery without awareness that two parties to the conduct necessarily will be involved. It is proposed, therefore, that in such cases the general section on complicity will be made inapplicable, leaving to the definition of the crime itself the selective judgment that must be made. If legislators know that buyers will not be viewed as accomplices in sales unless the statute indicates that this behavior is included in the prohibition, they will focus on the problem as they frame the definition of the crime. And their language was inevitably incident two.
And some of these things take tremendous quantities of gasoline, a couple thousand gallons of 50 cent a gallon gasoline at a crack. And you go to a big stop-off place like Phoenix or Grand Island, Nebraska, or one of these places, and you see the pilots who are equipped with every known credit card and American Express, Bank of America on top of it. You can tell pretty fast which operators are gimmicking back to the pilot because they get all the business. Guy goes through, he's been doing business with Standard for 27 years, and the word gets around that the Shell dealer is now booze, babes, money, whatever it is. And pretty soon the guy, instead of pulling up to the Standard pumps where he's been pulling up for the last 11 years, starts pulling up the Shell pumps. And then the guy who's selling Standard has to run around like a chicken with his head cut off, find out what the Shell guy's giving away, and then give away something equal.
You're going one better.
Yeah. And the truck stops, they're notorious for it, the big truck stop service stations.
Little American. Mm-hmm. Should we try to legislate on that?
Well, of course, the problem is that in most cases, it's when discovered, it's handled within the company. You know, you get the guy aside and say, we know that you've been doing such and such and such and such a station because everybody's doing such and such a station. Did we ever hear you doing that again? Why out you go on your ear?
Yeah, this is true in the insurance business. Crime, even in case of embezzlement, they would rarely ever prosecute.
What was it? Some guy in New York, some chief clerk for some stockbroking outfit, got away with $2.5 million with his fauna stock and company or somebody, and they refused to prosecute $2.5 million within the last 3 or 4 months because they didn't want to upset the market.
Well, isn't it further complicated by the fact that a lot of these organizations say the second echelon people that are hiring the adjusters say, now we can only pay you X number of dollars, but we're going to give you an expense account, and you can always make money on your expense account if you do it right, et cetera, et cetera. And the same with the...
And the boss...
Well, a lot of it relates back into income tax gimmicks.
That's right.
That the employer would rather show that as expense than pay him the wages for which he'd have to pay tax.
Exactly.
Cheaper for the employer to give a guy, in many cases, $25 a week car allowance than it is to give the guy the same a raise, which would give him $25 a week, because they both got to pay Social Security, and they both got to pay, one guy's going to pay income tax and so forth. And that 25 is going to cost the employer 40, so he comes out saving $15.
And it's a dying thing that's gnawing at our economy and our morals and everything else, and would be good if you could legislate about it, but it's so ingrained in the way of life.
I wonder, though, if it won't, I wonder if it's wrong to put the state of Oregon firmly on the side that this is a crooked practice. Whether it goes on or not, whether we know it goes on or not.
Well, there's another aspect.
That is,
I mean,
yeah.
There are,
do we put the state on that side and then have everybody wink at it?
Well, there are, we complain about our high taxes, and there's exterminates against those people who are honest, people that are motivated to go in for this sort of thing are really causing the state to impose higher taxes. And it seems to me probably we have a responsibility to do everything we can to discourage that type of activity.
One insurance company that we do work for prohibits all their people from letting us or anybody else take them to lunch that they do business with. The only one that I know of is Liberty Mutual.
And I have that.
I appreciate them. Because there's so damn much of that trying to get the law business of defending those insurance companies by booze and letting them win in a poker game and all that stuff.
I've had 2 years as manager of a newspaper in Los Angeles. Should have seen the things that our sales staff and sales managers had to provide to the out-of-town buyers when they came into town, you know.
Another thing I might mention that this section probably would cover, which I think is fairly common today, is the buying disclosure of trade secrets, business secrets. Mm-hmm. That's a buying executives, offering them high-paying jobs when you really only want to know something they know, which they learned at someone else's expense.
Is this aimed at that?
It wouldn't be aimed at that. I don't think how you could reach that. There is a case cited, a New Jersey case, but this man was just paid cash for disclosing
drug companies.
Formula. He had developed for another company while he was still employed.
It'd be pretty hard to get at that, wouldn't it?
Well, I move we approve sections 3 and 4.
Could I mention something on this? Now, on bribery earlier this week in subcommittee 2, we had similar language to this. The language upon an agreement or understanding. Now, that subcommittee had difficulty with that. And of course, there we were talking about public servants. But it seems to me that
what went through my head, too, and where I thought that that is good is that's when I thought of a motto, is that he knows damn well that this is being used for an improper purpose.
Or wasn't there some feeling that that should be changed to with the intent?
Well, that's what we did.
Yeah.
We struck upon an agreement or understanding and inserted, he offers, confers, or agreed to confer any pecuniary benefit upon a public servant with the intent that such public servant's vote, opinion, judgment, action, decision, or exercise of discretion in his official capacity will be thereby influenced.
Well, now, how would you transpose that?
Well, we could say, well, and let me say this, the reason was that we felt it was awkward because of the phrase upon an agreement or understanding might be construed to relate back to offer. And if you're looking at the evil intent of the guy who's offering the bribe, it's just as bad if he offers the bribe in the absence of an agreement. You can't have an agreement unless you've got a meeting of minds between the offeror and the receiver of the bribe. And the idea was,
subjective.
If he offers this bribe, even though there isn't any agreement, he's committed the offense. And so that we were looking at what kind of an intent did he have. So we changed it to read that you wouldn't need an agreement or understanding if you had the intent to unlawfully influence the public servant. And here you would have an intent to have the agent or employee violate a duty to his employer.
Mafia section in
New York. Well, that's more in line with the classic definition of bribery.
Mm-hmm. In the same way, as far as in section 4 here, solicit, the crooked employee could solicit a bribe in the absence of any agreement or understanding. And agreement. He's just as bad an actor as the guy who has the agreement, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Well, then how are we going to, well, what language precisely are we going to use?
Well, it would just be to delete, in both sections, delete the phrase upon an agreement or understanding and insert with the intent.
That?
Yeah.
Okay, I so move. If all in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion's carried. Then do you want to, can I entertain your motion now, Bob? Do you want to move approval of 3 and 4 as amended? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Still carried. Let's try to get through 5, and that'll give us at least one third of this draft, and see how we feel after we finish it.
Section 5 is three definitions that relate to the Section 6, 7, and 8, which involves bribery and sports.
Oh.
And it's almost exactly like both Michigan and New York, where they really have the problem. Both places.
Sports contest means any professional or amateur sport or athletic game or contest viewed by the public. Sports participant means any person who directly or indirectly participates in sports contests as a player, contestant, team member, coach, manager, trainer, or any other person directly associated with a player, contestant, or team member. Sports official means any person who acts in sports contests as an umpire, referee, judge, or sports contest official.
What do you mean in 2 by directly associated? I'm playing for the Mets. It's good this year to be playing for the Mets for a change.
For a change.
It could mean their agent. Most of them seem to have agents now that spend a good deal of time with them.
What about the doorman in my apartment house who I come out and say I'll try to hold it to 2 runs this afternoon, and has he become associated with me then? If he then rushes to the phone and calls the...
Are you the player?
Gamblers? Yeah.
I wouldn't think he was directly associated with you as a player.
Then we could go after him and some other...
He could be indirectly associated. No, strike that. Directly associated.
We'd get him and some other... he'd be an illegal gambler or something somewhere else. Or party to that.
Well, I suppose there will be... some coverage in the gambling section article, which hasn't been drafted yet, on gambling offenses.
Well, of course, bribery and sports bribery and gambling could go, probably would in most cases be intertwined, but maybe separate substantive offenses. I think. In reading your sections on what sports bribery is. I don't think unless he's a player or somebody directly connected with the team, you're really going to
That's right.
have much of a chance of hanging any of these on him. Because it's phrased in terms that he will be influenced not to give the best efforts. And the doorman might be a little slow in opening the door or something for the team.
Yeah, it really hurt much.
He might slam the door on the star player's foot as he goes through or something.
It would almost have to be someone directly advising a contestant.
Well, I can see a hang up there, but moving from that, well, staying with that for a minute, that's what you say, but it's not too explicit, is it? Well, I suppose legislative history is being perpetuated, I guess, here.
Well,
report.
Roger points out, we've got statutes now on this, but none of them have ever found their way into the Oregon courts.
We do have statutes on this?
Sports bribery.
Oh, yeah. Well, most of them are. They passed them about 10 years ago in the basketball scandals.
Yeah, all the...
Broke in the East.
That was one of these situations where all the states decided they better have something.
Everybody, all at once, they were about there.
That's kind of, must have been in vogue, like the campus disorder bills were in vogue this year.
Yeah. Or like criminal law revision is in vogue.
Yeah, the present statutes in terms of a...
most of them for years have dealt with horse and dog races.
Professional, semi-professional, or amateur participant, contestant, or player. And that's for bribing, and then acceptance of a bribe is by a... person, not use his best efforts. And then another section on coaches and officials. It's kind of interesting, they group these bribery of athletes right along with the section on cruelty to animals.
Well, they all rose out of, originally out of the horse race thing, I think. We've had them, you know, in this area. We've had some University of Seattle involvement up here, and the Hanky Pank was alleged to have involved the University of Portland game basketball here 5 or 6 years ago. In that particular case, the indictment returned to King County, Washington. I suppose that's where everybody lived.
Well, yeah, and just a couple of years ago, wasn't there a University of Oregon athlete who was on the carpet for he didn't report it soon. I mean, he mentioned some months later that this guy had approached him, but he didn't say anything about it. You know, football player or basketball player, I can't remember which.
Well, that was after he turned pro, though, wasn't it?
Well, I'm deciding the University of Oregon had such a poor record at that time that nobody figured that they could really make any difference in the outcome. They were going to lose anyway. It was a basketball guy.
Well, why did you delete the expects to participate or expects to act such as they had in New York? Do you think that was surplus?
Well, I deleted it because I didn't think it was necessary.
Got him indirectly participating. Well, I suspect that you've got him. The New York thing, I suppose, goes to the New York practice on naming judges on prize fights, where they name 5 judges and then they all show up ready to go to work, and then at about 3 minutes before the prize fight starts, while the commission, the New York commissioner, pulls out a paper and says, "All right, the following 3 of you will be judges tonight, and the other 2." Get standby pay and just sit there and watch the fight, but there are only 3 that get counted and keep from fixing fight judges.
I didn't know that. Of course, the way to get around that is to bribe all 5 of them.
You better bribe the commissioner.
In theory, of course. If you've got the commissioner and 5 judges all bribed, somebody's going to talk. More so than if you only got 3 bribed. Or 2 it is, actually, 2 that officiate.
It seems to me that the way we define sports participant, the only advantage of expects to participant would be to a person who had never before participated in a sports activity.
That's the guy who jumps off jumps out of the stands and runs out and tackles the football players before he makes the touchdown.
Like Rademacher in his first professional fight.
Last one, too.
First and last.
Were there any reported New York cases? And
Maryland case, University of Maryland, Iowa case. But all the cases involved basketball players. And this was 1956, 1953, and the 50s.
There's a great big tall young man who comes around, still comes around with the Apache team for the Harlem Globetrotters. He was a great basketball player at the University of Kentucky a few years ago.
Spivey?
Yeah, and he doesn't play anymore. Luke Rosa's brother was also, Luke Rosa was playing for the Cleveland Browns at the time, clean as a whistle, and his brother was a basketball player at Kentucky, and Spivey got involved in some stuff, and neither one of them has ever been able to play.
What was Rosa's brother's name?
I forgot. Al.
Alex Rosa.
Alex.
Well, shall we approve the definitions tentatively as, or move on into the... Do you think we've reached the point of diminishing returns?
Kind of.
Yeah. I think we have. We really haven't approved the definitions for business and commercial frauds. We did substitute the definition of property, but we never really went back and analyzed the other three definitions. I think probably we ought to go all the way through go through 6, 7, and 8 before we make a final decision on 5, and I think maybe it'd be a good time to stop and come back to the definitions and any objection?
No.
Okay. You can knock it off.
When we need it.
As an affirmative defense, but their definition of affirmative defense leaves the burden on the state. Now, when George Platt drafted the renunciation defense to solicitation and to conspiracy and to attempt, he felt that the burden should be on the defendant. And I agree with him wholeheartedly that if we're going to allow this, and if we feel it's good policy to try to encourage participants in a crime to pull out and renunciate, if we are going to allow this, that we should not leave it on the state to prove that no renunciation took place. In other words, that the defendant should be required to plead this, or to prove this. Now, on page 13, I indicate that I submitted this conditionally because the basic policy questions are the same that the commission is going to have to consider with respect to attempts, and that if it seems to me if we're going to allow it in one place, we'll allow it in the other, and if not, in neither places. I can't see that we should allow renunciation in the question of an attempt, but not a completed crime or vice versa. But although I suppose you could argue that with respect to an attempt, well, you haven't gone to the completed crime, it's still more in the planning than preparatory stages. And we're going to let him pull out, he's going to have to pull out there or not at all. I suppose you can make that argument. But in any event,
you'd have a heck of a time improvement on an attempt that he renunciated before the completed attempt, wouldn't it?
Well, of course. Renunciation as a defense to a charge of attempt provides that it has to be under circumstances manifesting a voluntary and complete renunciation of his criminal purpose, and that he avoids the commission of the crime attempted by abandoning his criminal effort. And then, if mere abandonment is insufficient to accomplish this avoidance, doing everything necessary to prevent the commission of the attempted crime.
Don, why is, without regard to the substance, why isn't the language the same?
Well,
the renunciation defense under attempts that you just read is different language in the renunciation defense here.
Yeah, it is. And it's different language in model penal code also. And they, and the reason was they felt there's, that, that this would be more stringent, that he has to, you still have to have the complete voluntary renunciation, and you still have to have a termination. But then you have to further show that you not only terminated, but you deprived your participation of any effectiveness in the trial. Or that, whereas under the attempt renunciation draft, it just says doing everything necessary. Where here we say he has to give timely warning to law enforcement authorities. You make specific affirmative duties.
Well, you know, for my own part, again, I think I don't think it's necessary, and I would vote to take it out unless you others can convince me. I think we've got so many relative terms here of its effectiveness in the commission of this crime. Well, gives timely warning. Well, that isn't quite as relative, but I think we're going to. I think this kind of thing leads the court into a hair pulling session on interpretation of it.
And I like about it, of course, is the first clause B.
Gives timely warning?
Yeah.
What is timely warning?
Enough to get it stopped.
Enough to get it stopped.
The efficient time to get it, time to allow it.
Well, it wouldn't necessarily have to be in time to get it stopped.
Or to affect the arrest of the immediate arrest of the perpetrator, I suppose.
Timely warning might be to get it stopped, or insufficient time to nab the guys in their getaway. Right?
Or sufficient time to nab them.
Mm-hmm. And what's otherwise makes proper effort to prevent the commission of the crime?
Well, of course, as the model penal code points out, that the action that's going to be needed here is going to vary from one case
right,
to the next.
Right.
And they didn't want to try to make the rule too specific.
Leave some discretion to the court, don't you? I mean, if
right,
you didn't, there wouldn't be any.
They say there will be cases where the only way that the accomplice can deprive his conduct of his effectiveness is to make independent efforts to prevent the crime. When that is so, the law should nonetheless accord the possibility of gaining an immunity, provided there is timely warning to the law enforcement authorities, or there otherwise is proper effort to prevent commission of the crime. The sort of effort that should be demanded turns so largely on the circumstances that it does not seem advisable to attempt formulation of a more specific rule.
In timely warning, law enforcement officers and the guy that's 100 miles back in the hills away from the telephone might be different than if he was in town. Then he'd have to go by or otherwise makes reasonable effort.
Yeah.
Well,
what's the status of this article in 3 again, Subcommittee 3?
We have been through most of it one time, rather hurriedly. It has been approved conditionally up through section 10, I believe. But
so
the subcommittee hasn't decided on it to the point of sending it to the commission.
The thing I'm looking at is, of course, their Article 3 or their Section 3. Then they've approved the principle of this thing as far as including the idea that the defense has to be approved by the defendant instead of just negative by the state.
Yeah.
You said that somebody's definition of affirmative defense means that the state has got to disprove it?
Yeah. Under the model penal code approach to affirmative defense, the burden is still on the
the state to prove...
To disprove it.
If that's the case, then does the defendant have to plead it?
Well, I suppose it's like self-defense. The defendant has to raise it.
Just raises it.
I don't think he'd have to plead it. I think to get to a jury, though, he'd have to raise the point. Otherwise, there'd be no evidence, no possibility of...
Yeah, and the way Michigan handles it, Michigan says the burden of injecting the issue is on the defendant, but this does not shift the burden of proof, which means that the burden is still on the state.
To prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt.
Which, in effect, means that they have to disprove renunciation.
Proving that nothing happened. Yeah, which is a kind of a tough thing to...
Oh, yeah, I think that we wouldn't want to go that far to say not only we're going to allow renunciation, but this, the
it's
burden's
the
on the state
to disprove proof that something didn't happen. No, I don't. Well, as I'm kind of taken with perhaps I'm... not doing so properly, but I'm kind of taken with the idea that somewhere in the statutes we're going to require somebody, in effect, at least under some circumstances, as it provides in Section 2 of this thing, to one of the ways that he can clear himself is to notify the authorities of something that he knows is about to take place. Now, this doesn't apply to every citizen, just to the guy who's would otherwise be guilty under, liable under Section 2. We can put it in our civics books in the sixth grade, right? Won't put all these qualifying things in it, maybe we'll get the point across. Turn a bunch of squealers out of it, what's it called?
Well, or you might want to just...
Conditionally approve it?
Conditionally approve it or disapprove it, however you want to do, with the idea in mind that you might want to take another look at it, depending upon what happens on the attempt provision.
Well, the thing I would, if this committee has gone into the thing to the point that they're ready to move on with the same thing on something that isn't really quite a crime yet, you know, just a rudimentary form of a crime, then I think it behooves us to keep it in something where we say it's an actual crime.
Unless they're kind of tiptoeing their way around it like we are.
Waiting for us to do something.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're not waiting for you to do something, because at the time we considered this, the draft on parties hadn't been done yet. But I don't want to speak for that subcommittee now and tell you that they have approved it, because they haven't, because we've got further work to do on it, and it may not be approved by the time we're through with it.
I was trying to get a reading on how they're moving on.
I think probably what we should do is make up our own mind and then argue the basic policy question out in the full commission, because we're going to have to do it since it come out of different subcommittees.
Well, I'd move then we conditionally approve it, depending on the commission. The full commission decides if it wants to go this route. If it is, then it should be in both sections. And I think we'd make a mistake to take it out of this section and leave it in the other, reserving the right to argue against it.
The more things you get in a criminal case where you define the burden of proof and one thing or another, you're getting them all mixed up. You've got it with insanity, but everything else, state has the burden of proof. You get this darn thing in here and it's liable to be attempted by defendants all the time. It's the last straw. And the court's going to have to instruct the jury on the difference between preponderance of evidence as applied to one issue and back and forth. It's a difficult thing to handle, and I don't think there's many instances where an accused defendant would have a legitimate defense on this, where he wouldn't otherwise have a legitimate defense, just like your example about the kid that didn't know anything they were going to steal or hold somebody up. I don't think it's much need for it, and it clutters up the orderly procedure of the trial of a criminal case.
Of course, I never tried in criminal cases, and I'm unlikely to do so. But I think that sub 2 of section 5 would keep the thing from being raised willy-nilly in every criminal case.
Well, wouldn't that be true, Bob, if this was in the conjunctive, but it's in the disjunctive? Sub 2 might... Oh, well, I'm sorry, strike that. You're meaning B, aren't you?
No, I'm meaning 2.
2.
Where the defendant has the burden of proof.
Defendant has to raise it. Because he's got to be prepared to present witnesses.
And if that's all you got, that's, well, you're going to town with it if you can.
But all he needs to do is call himself as a witness. His own testimony could be,
he's going to say, I called the cops at 10:32, right, and the police log shows no calls being received.
That isn't the only way out for him under this.
No, I know that's right. I agree. I tried to start the car and drive away from the bank, but the solenoid was busted.
Yeah, just his own word for it. Even though it never happened.
You know, he could cover himself in a situation like this by writing a letter to the police, putting it in the mail, and then going ahead with the crime.
Timely?
It's not timely.
It's up to the jury to say whether it's timely or not.
Yeah.
Well, don't we have great faith in the jury?
Maybe he mailed it on Friday, and it was supposed to be delivered to the police in Powell View. They don't have Saturday deliveries, and they got it Monday, and the robbery was on Sunday. They gave 2 days' notice. He didn't know, he could say. Well, anyway, there's a motion to provisionally approve Section 5. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. No.
Come back.
After 18 months, we finally had one thing on which we disagreed.
Sounds like rules, the Ben that stand approved?
Sound like the Ben school vote.
Well,
even the recount found it was tied.
Well, I think that what that means is that it dies.
Failed to get a majority.
Right, and I'll also advise subcommittee number 3.
Section 5 is not.
Right. We'll have a chance to argue it again, I presume.
Right.
When Subcommittee 3 comes in.
When it's resubmitted, I think that that first and before sub A, there shouldn't be a semicolon there. That's why I voted against it. There was that typographical mistake. All right. 6. Yes, you're right.
Here's my pet.
Okay, well, this is on corporate liability. Now, going way back now, when we were way back on definitions, we talked about corporate liability to some extent.
We sure did.
Person means a human being or appropriate a public or private corporation, et cetera, et cetera. Now,
what was that?
That's under our general definitions.
Way back early there, because we didn't want to let corporations off.
Yeah, we wanted to. Now, we had some discussion at that time as to, if we put that in the definition, there are going to be instances where it just doesn't fit. The definition of the crime just doesn't fit when you apply it to a corporation. Of course, that's true, and it's true under our present law, and even though we have a definition now that includes corporations, the court has said that there are some cases where it just doesn't stand to reason that the legislature intended to apply this corporation. Of course, one of the best known cases was this Roseburg case, as you know, Bruce, that Pacific Powder case, and where the corporation had been indicted for manslaughter as a result of the truck exploding, and people were killed. And the court has held there that it wouldn't apply, and that they interpreted the reasoning of the legislature and the legislative intent not to apply criminal sanctions to corporations for that kind of conduct. And this draft doesn't really change that. But it does attempt to articulate corporate liability to a greater extent than we have now in our criminal statutes. And based on the model penal code, the New York and Illinois and Michigan are all, their approach to corporate liability is all based on the model penal code. So I haven't made any changes in the approach that they've taken. There's an awful lot of discussion about corporate liability, some of which I've quoted in the commentary.
Couldn't the AMA.
Definition section 6, sub 1, defines agent, defines high managerial agent, and then in
that
sub.
No, that, this isn't a civil service classification, is it, Doc?
No.
Agent or?
Not a GS-18.
No.
If you like that.
Not agent. All right.
And we're talking about someone who has policy making authority in the corporation.
I was just being facetious.
Yeah, I know. But then the corporation is liable or is guilty of an offense. Here, if it's engaged in by an agent of the corporation, scope of his employment, language is familiar tort law, certain standards, respondeat superior. But you see under sub A, under 2, it's limited to a misdemeanor or a violation. We're not imposing any felony criminal liability on the corporation, unless it's under a statute that clearly indicates a legislative intent to impose criminal liability on the corporation. So by enacting such a provision, we're not making a corporation liable for murder or armed robbery or anything like this, any felony crime. Or under sub B, if it's an omission to discharge a specific duty that's imposed on corporations by law, or the conduct constituting the offense is engaged in, authorized, solicited, requested, commanded, or knowingly tolerated by the board of directors or a high managerial agent, but again within the scope of his employment in behalf of the corporation.
Knowingly tolerated, take care of the electrical companies cases a few years ago.
What cases?
The electrical companies. Where the electrical manufacturers, the Westinghouses, Niles, Chalmers, and General Electrics.
You know, when we had our discussion about this before, you were talking, I believe, that we have some sort of a double or treble damages provision attached to these corporate crimes. Don, did you?
Because of no other means of effectively punishing the corporation.
Right.
You can't put the corporate seal in jail for a year, you know.
I suppose we'd get to that under penalty.
Yeah.
Right. Now, do we get to the repository of the offense, so to speak, under penalties too? That is to say, who faces a rap? Two examples. I had two bills this session in my committee, which would affect corporations. One was a bill of Senator Wilner's and Representative Hansel's, which would have made it a misdemeanor for any railroad train to block a grade crossing for more than 10 minutes in a city or more than 5 minutes outside a city. Made it a misdemeanor. We investigated it. A number of municipalities in Oregon have city ordinances to that effect. Baker has one. 10 minutes, block a grade crossing, it's a punishable by a year and 6 months in jail and a $500 fine. They've never used it.
Don't know who to put in jail.
So they don't know who to put in jail. Someplace else has one. Someplace else has one. They used it once. They took the engineer off the train and put him in jail.
They used to be very common statutes around, particularly in the eastern United States, a number of years ago. Grade crossing.
Right.
State statute.
Well, where are you going to define who goes to jail? The engineer? The president of the UP who happens to be back in Omaha?
No. A high managerial agent is only guilty if he authorizes it, solicits it, requests it, commands it, or knowingly tolerates it, as I read this thing.
Obviously you can't put the whole corporation in jail, so you gotta decide which ones you're going to. And of course,
you put the agent in jail.
Yeah, you put
unless the high managerial agent had told him to do it.
Right.
Which he could put in.
You do that now. The person who actually commits a crime, whether he's an agent or what he is, can go to jail now. But that isn't the corporation going to jail.
Well,
you can't do anything to a corporation.
Well,
maybe
the problem is, the thing that brought it to mind, Mike, is the reason I was kind of hipped on the subject is something of this. This bunch of cases involving electrical equipment manufacturers about 10 years ago, in which case various vice presidents were found guilty of gathering in a motel in Pittsburgh and whacking up the market and setting prices on generators they were selling to the Wapanisha Dam and so forth and so on around the country. And the companies have paid out General Electric's paid out something over $100 million in civil damages as a result of it in the last 10 years. Pretty substantial chunks of money. But the vice presidents all got canned and lost their jobs, and there was no criminal sanction against the companies. The companies, in that particular case, it's been a pretty damned expensive thing for the companies, and they've had, I'm sure they're sorry about it now. Probably won't ever do it again, but it seems to me there's smaller aspects of this thing that where a guy may go to the engineer may be hauled off the train and put in jail when he's been told by the vice president of Union Pacific, look, I don't care what they say in that hick town, you don't move that train until such and such happens, and you can send a whole succession of engineers there who doing it to hold their jobs, and there's nothing that ever comes back on the company, except, and unless somebody sues them civilly because the ambulance was held up and his baby was born in the ambulance or something.